Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through the American Indian Mythos section of Deities and Demigods, and we're going to talk particularly about some characters from the mythology of the southwestern U.S. First things first, though, I have to issue a correction for last episode. It seems to me that the boom period, or at least in terms of the books that I have, that the boom period of Native American ethnography, these stories were collected like kind of between the 30s and the 60s, and what that means is that there is sometimes some outdated terminology in them. Canadian listener Albert pointed out that the name Queen Charlotte Islands is no longer used for that part of British Columbia, and the indigenous name is now more commonly used. That's Haida Gwaii, which literally just means Haida Islands. The Haida people, who I described as living in the Queen Charlotte Islands, they don't call them that anymore. They're Haida Gwaii. So I'm probably going to make more errors like that, so do keep any corrections coming. Speaking of which, I'm going to have to make some attempts today to pronounce words in the Navajo language, and I'm going to do my best. I've gone and looked up like videos and things of people, Navajo speakers telling these stories, but it's still probably not going to be perfect. Finally, I'm skipping a god. Well, I'm not skipping him permanently, but I'm coming back to him later on. One of the deities in today's section of the Deities and Demigods book is a character called, I think it's pronounced something like Hasteltzi or Hasteltzi or something. I'm gonna work on that pronunciation. Here credited as the god of racing. I'm not so convinced that that is that deity's main thing. And there's a particular book that I want to take a look at to understand more of the mythology of this being, and I just haven't had time to get to the university library yet, so I'm postponing him until I've had a chance to do more research. But that doesn't affect our first entry, which is for Coyote. Coyote is in many ways similar to Raven. That's an oversimplification, but he shares with Raven the trait of appearing in a wide range of different myths, in a wide range of different cultures, really primarily across the West and Southwest, but also going up into the Plains states. Basically, anywhere that you find coyotes, you'll find myths about Coyote the trickster. So Coyote appears as a trickster, and often, like Raven, he has the traits of being sort of greedy and self-interested and dumb, and often also, like Raven, he has a sort of cosmic role. So, for example, there is a Navajo myth about how Coyote contributed to the creation of the Milky Way. And particularly, I don't know if this is generally true, but in Navajo mythology, there does seem to be this trend where Coyote kind of symbolizes humans, and he just basically has like a lot of impatience and recklessness. And he reminds me a little bit, and I don't know if this is a fair comparison, but he reminds me a little bit of the character of Sun Wukong from The Journey to the West. Specifically the idea that like you're not supposed to want to do what Coyote does. Like Coyote is a bad guy and he sometimes could be quite dangerous, and even when he's not, he's a reckless dummy and you're not supposed to emulate him. But at the same time, I think that people find him quite amusing and fun. So you're not supposed to like him, but kind of a scapegrace anti-hero, is actually fun and relatable. And like Raven, he's associated with the gift of fire and light, which is, it says here in Deities and Demigods. It also says that often his tricks backfire on him, which is true. His role is primarily that of a cowardly thief. But I think the recklessness and impatience are important as well. And Coyote stories are very common, a bit like Raven stories in that respect, in the cultures where you get this myth of Coyote the trickster. And so I thought I would read some selections from different Coyote stories. These were all collected in American Indian Myths and Legends, selected and edited by Richard Erdos and Alfonso Ortiz. Oh, I should note that Coyote stories often have kind of like a ribald quality about them. So although the language isn't too extreme, some of these might not be right for our younger listeners. This story was recorded on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Comes from the Lakota people. I think the Brule Lakota, that's who live on that reservation, although it's credited to the White River Sioux, Sioux being, an older term. And this was recorded by Richard Erdos. And the story is called, "What's This? My Balls for Your Dinner?" So in the story, Iktomi, who's the spider, and who's also kind of a trickster figure, comes home and tells his wife that he's got some buffalo livers for their dinner and that he's going to have Coyote as a guest for dinner, and he's got two buffalo livers. And his wife correctly suspects that his proposal is that he and Coyote are going to eat the two buffalo livers, and she's going to get left with the turnips and the berry soup and so forth. And so she's a little disappointed. He goes out to see if he can catch a duck before dinner because he thinks Coyote is greedy and, you know, he might eat even more than two buffalo livers. So she is annoyed with him, and she's cooking the buffalo livers, and she thinks, well, you know, they won't mind if I have just a little bit. And so she takes just a little taste from one of the livers. She's like, oh, it's so good. And then she takes, like, just a little bit more and a little bit more. And before you know it, she's eaten up both the buffalo livers. And now she's thinking, uh-oh, I'm going to get in trouble when Ikitomi comes home because I ate the dinner that was supposed to be for him and his guest. But Coyote arrives before Ikitomi comes back. And Ikitomi has already warned his wife that, you know, Coyote might try something, you know, he's a bit of a ladies' man or whatever. So when Coyote arrives, you know, well, one thing leads to another, and he has sex with Ikitomi's wife. When they're done, Coyote is like, well, I can't help but notice that there are only turnips cooking on the fire. Does that mean I'm not going to get any meat? I'm a coyote. I like meat. And Ikitomi's wife, whose name appears to be Old Woman, says, no, of course you're going to get meat. Well, you've never been here before. That's why you're saying that. Because if you'd been here before, you know what we always serve our guests. And he says, oh, what's that that you always serve your guests? And she pulls out a knife and says, your balls. And she goes, yeah, no, look, I'm just gonna cut your balls off. Hold still. You won't feel a thing. I've done this so many times. And Coyote says to her, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna step outside and go to the bathroom. And then I'll come right back in and you can cut my balls off. And as soon as he gets outside, he starts running away frantically. So I'll read you this section of the story because I think it's pretty good. Just then, Ikitomi came back without any ducks. He had caught nothing. He saw Coyote running away and asked, Old woman, what's the matter with that crazy friend of mine? Why is he running off like that? Your good friend is very greedy. He doesn't have the sharing spirit, his wife told Ikitomi. Never invite him again. He has no manners. He doesn't know how to behave. He saw those two fine buffalo livers, which I cooked just as you like them, and didn't want to share them with you. He grabbed both and made off with them. Some friend. Ikitomi rushed out of the lodge in a frenzy, running after Coyote as fast as he could, shouting, Coyote! Friend! Leave me at least one! Leave one for me, for your old friend Ikitomi! Coyote didn't stop. He ran even faster than Ikito. Running, running, he looked back over his shoulder and shouted, Cousin, if you catch me, you can have both of them. So again, you know, here we have Coyote, like a greedy, lecherous character who gets undone by his own deceptions. There's a story that comes from the White Mountain Apache, in which Coyote has to fight a man made of pitch. That was recorded by Granville Goodwin in 1939. And in several of these Coyote stories from the Southwest, the targets of Coyote's trickery are often white Americans. You know, so there, I think the trickster has been kind of turned into, you know, the one who, like, lets the wind out of the sort of pompous upper class. And this often involves tricking soldiers or wealthy white merchants out of their fancy horses. That seems to be a pretty common recurring theme in these Coyote stories. Other things that happen in myths about Coyote are, there's a story in which he's not having very much luck fishing, and he poops, and his own poop starts talking to him and insulting him, but after a while it starts giving him some good fishing advice. I mentioned the story in which he creates the Milky Way. So what happens is that some of the holy people and first man and first woman are laying out the stars, and they're using, like, chips of mica. That's what the stars are. And they're placing them all around, and they have all their unused stars on a blanket. And eventually Coyote just gets so bored waiting for them to finish placing all the stars precisely that he just grabs the blanket and, like, gives it a snap, and all the loose chips that are lying on the dust that are lying on the blanket, they fly up into the sky and they become the Milky Way. So there are these certain, like, very specifically placed constellations that are the stars that were precisely put in the right locations by the holy people and by first man or first woman. And then there are all the other ones in the Milky Way that were just scattered there all willy-nilly by Coyote. Now, I'm no expert on the religious and cultural practices of, like, for example, the Navajo. I mean, I've done some reading, but I am far from an expert. But it seems to me that, just like most other religions, it's very hard to map onto Navajo religious practices the idea of being a cleric of such and such a deity. You do get things like that in, like, in the Norse sagas. So, for example, you have characters like Hrafnkell Freysgothi, who's a priest of Frey, and you get it in, like, ancient Greece, but I feel like a lot of the time in other polytheistic cultures, what you get are holy people who represent different deities under different circumstances. You know, so in a particular ceremony, this particular person might take on the role of Coyote, or in a different ceremony, they might take on the role of somebody else. That's my understanding. You have to sort of be initiated into those roles, but I don't think that in most cases you can't do more than one, and that, you know, more experienced ritual specialists might very well have knowledge of a wide number of them. I mean, if someone who knows more about the way, you know, Navajo sacred practices work wants to tell me otherwise, I will believe them, but that's my admittedly superficial understanding. So I wonder if you might not have a character who kind of had these different aspects and could be considered as a cleric of a different deity depending on the social or sacred role that they were taking on. You know, maybe most of the time you represent one particular deity, and then sometimes, you know, you put on your Coyote mask and it's like, oh, here comes trouble. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think it actually works even better in older editions of AD&D, where the god that your cleric is a cleric of has less mechanical effect on what you can do. So if you think about how in like 3rd through 5th editions, you have the clerical domains. Again, not an expert on 1st, but my understanding is that that plays a much less important role. So you might think of that process as being like selecting your spells. You know, I'm going to choose these particular spells that are full of like trickiness and deception. That means that I'm Coyote at this point. But if I'm going to have these other spells that are about healing, then I might be somebody else. And it's just a thought. And also, naturally, Coyote would make an excellent patron for kind of rogues and illusionists. The role of a sacred rogue is kind of an interesting one. You know, rogues are typically regarded as kind of social outcasts. But it might be interesting to look at the idea of rogues having kind of a socially defined outcast role. And I think that Coyote can kind of represent that. Okay, like I said before, I'm skipping the next entry. So I'm just going to move on to the next deity. His name is written here as like Haschezini. I've heard it pronounced as Haschechin or Haschechin. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but he's often called the Black God, or the Black Lord, as is given here. He's one of a group of beings called the Ye, and they are often described as gods, but equally often a term that you'll see applied to them is holy people. And they are quite important characters in the Navajo creation myth, or the Diné Bahané, as it's called, which just means the story of the people. Navajo is a word that is applied to the Navajo people in other indigenous languages, and then becomes the common Spanish word for them. The more common term in Navajo, as I understand it, is Diné, which just means people. And so anyway, yeah, he plays quite an important role in the Navajo creation myth. He's one of the sacred people who is arranging the stars when Coyote, you know, messes it all up. And he teaches a number of important skills to humans. He's the inventor of the fire drill. Not the fire drill in the sense of, like, what you do in the event that there's a fire, but of the tool used to make fire. Often is represented as sort of as an old man. And I think maybe there's this sense of being kind of like charred and blackened. I mean, I assume that's why he's the Black Lord, is that you know, he's burnt because he's a fire god. And he's not, I think, supposed to be like very likable. He's kind of like a grumpy old holy person. He's a cosmic deity. If you see an illustration of his face, of the masks that commonly represent him, he has a crescent moon on his forehead, and then he has a full moon for his mouth, and then he's got the Pleiades, which is a constellation that he's particularly associated with, kind of up to one side of his brow. So he's definitely associated with the night sky, and this idea being that the twinkling of the stars is fire that he put into them. It's also said that he's a rival of Begochidi, who's the god of animals, because of the harm that fire can cause to wildlife, I guess, is the idea there. Again, he's a god of fire who kind of belies the idea that gods are really separated into these neatly definable categories, because he does appear in other ritual practices, including those associated with healing. You know, he's a being of great cosmic power. He's not really confined to the sort of simplistic portfolio of being a fire god. So I quite like this guy. I think he's a really great example of a fire deity who's not just like flamey McBurnerson. You know, I have my reservations about presenting these mythologies in games, as I've said before, but I do think that he's a fantastic example for people who are interested in creating a fictional deity, because normally when you get a fire god, it's, like I said, it's flamey McBurnerson, and you're like, oh, what is your fire goddess like? Oh, let me guess, she's hot-tempered and unpredictable, and she represents other fiery things. Maybe she's warlike, or maybe she's passionate and like a fiery redhead or whatever, right? It's just, okay, sure. But Hashchezhin, or Hashchezhini, or, I mean, again, I'm making a mess of this pronunciation, but the black god is a fantastic fire deity who shows how much more complex and interesting real-world fire deities actually are. He has the complexities that people associate with fire, so it's not just that he's the inventor of these fire technologies, but also the symbolic fire that appears, you know, in the stars. So he's also associated with astronomy, and I don't know, he just seems like a more interesting and complicated deity. He seems like a very good choice for like an all-rounder kind of PC cleric. If you just want to serve a god, it's kind of like a god of the natural order. He seems like a good candidate, and he seems like a good example for designing more realistic deities. If that's your goal, of course. I mean, given the extent that most deities get involved in a D&D campaign, you know, maybe realistic deities aren't necessarily a priority. I accept that. George R. R. Martin argument, which we've had before. Now, it says that he dwells on the elemental plane of fire, which is a super boring, I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? It fits in with the D&D planar cosmology, but it's very dull. But it's very dull compared to how interesting his actual habitation is. He lived originally in a place called the Third World. The Navajo creation myth is a story of the ascent of these characters, first man, first woman, the great coyote who was formed in the water, and coyote first angry, what's sometimes called the first four. And they climb, or, you know, not climb, but they ascend through a series of worlds until they get to, you know, our world, the modern world. And in the third world, they find these sacred mountains. And those sacred mountains are then, like, recreated in the fourth world. I've mentioned some of this stuff before in the Fiend Folio, because the Eye Killer, I think, comes from this myth as well. Anyway, the holy people, among whom is the black god, they are these powerful immortals, and they are kind of responsible for the becoming human of first man and first woman. Once first man and first woman and their various companions emerge in the fourth world and like begin to shape it according to their needs, the black yay, the fire god, is sort of, they find him again. You know, that he had been in the third world, and then they kind of find him and bring him into the fourth world. It says, first man found him in a place where there was fire under the earth and called to him, and he returned to the first Hogan with first man. So, I don't know, he's quite this, like, interesting mystical character who does things like create mountains and create constellations. He appears to help humanity at various times. You know, just he's just such a much more complex or interesting character than this simple description of a fire god. And this thing about how he burns down villages when people displease him, I don't know what that comes from. I don't know, maybe there's a historical basis for that, but in general, he seems to be quite a benevolent character. Anyway, I think, you know, I was sort of not expecting to appreciate the Black Yay as much as I did. Again, I think he's a fantastic reminder of the actual complexity of real-world mythology, and has some inspiring qualities for finding symbolic associations that aren't necessarily present in a lot of D&D pantheons. So, for instance, it makes perfect sense from the Navajo perspective that a fire god should also be a star god because, you know, stars are fire-like. But it's not that common an association in some other mythologies, and so sometimes we overlook it. And he's got actually quite a nice illustration, even though it is wildly inappropriate for the cultural context in which he originates. I wonder, you know, if I can find this specific spelling of the Black God's name, I could probably tell you the specific book that these legends are coming from. Maybe I'll do that when I go through the Navajo section in the university library. All right, anyway, that's about all the deities that we have time for today. In 2 weeks, we will be returning and we'll be talking about Heng, a thunder spirit. Hiawatha, who is described as a legendary hero, which is a little weird since, as I understand it, he is a historical figure, and if we have time, Hotaru the wind god. And it's just going to get harder and harder to find some of these. Hiawatha I've got down. I know who he is, but some of these other ones, we'll see. I'm sure we will all learn. I mean, say what you like about the kind of vague, mushy complexity of this passage. I am definitely learning a lot, and I hope that you, my listeners, are enjoying the process of my learning things here on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.